It's another week. It's Tuesday, if you're listening live, and you're hearing David Crowder, what my son calls the hunting song, and I have no idea why that's what he calls it, but that's what he calls it, the hunting song. So you hear that, you know that's time to talk about life. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, you can listen live, Joy 620, every afternoon on Tuesday, every Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock, or you can listen to the podcast. You can find the podcast at investinghope.com. You can find it TuneIn app, Apple Podcast, wherever podcasts are found, you can find this show. Today what I want to do is talk about a number of things. There's been some things happening in the news around the world concerning abortion and life issues, and we're going to discuss those today. So we're going to start with some news coming out of Nashville today that's a very big deal for the pro-life movement. Then we'll talk about a recent vote that happened in Argentina and why that's important. And then we'll look at one of the worst polls ever done when discussing and talking about abortion and life. And so what we're going to do is as we look through all of that, my hope is that you'll be encouraged and challenged to get involved, but also that you'll see that although it may appear at times that we're losing this uphill battle, we are not. We are actually winning, and I think we are on the cusp of something very special across this country, and states are already maneuvering and presenting legislation for the next session to prepare for the day that we pray is coming, where Roe v. Wade would be a thing of the past, as we are getting closer and closer to the confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh. Which, you know, many people will say, some people would say that that's not going to happen, but I can assure you it's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. Just wait for it. Probably by the end of September, maybe a little bit into October, but I think he's going to be confirmed in just the next month or so. So be watching for that. But I want to start with some news out of Nashville that, as pro-lifers, this should excite us and help us to see that our work is making a difference. So the Women's Center in Nashville, which is operated in the city since 1990, stopped taking new patients over the weekend and is now referring women to clinics in Knoxville and Bristol, said the clinic attorney just the other day. The center is closing because the owners have agreed to sell the building, and the details of the sale are being finalized. The Women's Center intends to reopen, so they say, and is now searching for a new location. Now, I'll stop right there. The interesting thing about this, anytime an abortion clinic closes and then they say they're seeking another location, what they find is it's very difficult to find another location. Why is that? Well, it's because landlords don't want to lease to them. And then it's people that own buildings, that are selling buildings, don't necessarily want to sell buildings to abortion clinics. So we have to watch to see if they actually are, in fact, going to reopen. What this means is currently Nashville, one of the largest cities in the state of Tennessee, now only has one abortion clinic. So they had two, now they only have one. That is a big deal for pro-lifers. And the article in the Tennessean goes further. We are looking, this is what the attorney says, we are looking for an alternative site but haven't found anything yet. We have one doctor who would like to continue, but it's just a question of finding a place. So they only have one doctor that would like to continue abortions. Jesse declined to identify the potential buyer of the Women's Center building, which is located on Welshwood Drive there in Nashville. The closure of the Women's Center is a significant blow for, this is what the article says, a significant blow for women's access to abortion in Tennessee. The center is at least the third clinic to close in recent years, leaving only five others throughout the state. In Nashville, a national hub for the healthcare industry, Planned Parenthood is now the only abortion option. Tennessee Right to Life, of course they call them the anti-abortion group based in Nashville, praised the Women's Center closure as a milestone for pro-life efforts. In an email, they said, "We thank God for answering the prayers of so many pro-life Tennesseans," said group president Brian Harris. At the same time, we recognize that vigilance in continuing all of our pro-life efforts is necessary to keep another abortion chain from stepping in to reap profit from the abortions of innocent unborn children. In addition to being one of the few options for women in Tennessee, the Women's Center also had a record of fighting in court to preserve women's abortion options. In 2002, the Nashville Center successfully challenged a law requiring abortion clinics to be licensed as ambulatory surgery centers, which would likely have increased abortion prices. Now, think about that for a second. Now, this I wasn't going to talk about this, but it's brought up in the article. In 2002, they fought a law that would require them to be licensed as an ambulatory surgery center. Now think, what is abortion? There is a medical form that you can take two pills, but there's also surgical form where they actually go through surgery to perform the abortion. So it's not out of the question to ask an abortion clinic to be ambulatory surgery centers and be licensed as such. That's not stretching. That's not asking. That's not an undue burden that some would point to. In Casey versus Planned Parenthood, if you go back to 1992, that they really pushed the undue burden. Roe v. Wade kind of put that into place in 1973. Asking for a center that provides surgeries to be licensed surgery centers is not an undue burden. That's what they should be doing. And if they care deeply about women's health, then why wouldn't they do it anyway? But I digress. The state reintroduced this law again in 2012, but later abandoned enforcement after it became clear the requirement they said was unconstitutional. The Women's Center also sued the state to challenge a new law requiring a 48-hour waiting period for all abortions. That lawsuit continues today, but will likely continue even if the Women's Center shuts down because other clinics, including Planned Parenthood, later joined as plaintiffs. Now, let me stop there for that law. The 48-hour waiting period simply says that after an ultrasound, you have to wait 48 hours before you can have an abortion. Again, this is not an undue burden. This is not whether you agree with abortion or not. Well, one thing that we all can agree on is abortion should not be a decision that is made in haste or quickly. There are multiple lives involved when you were talking about abortion. And so asking that they wait 48 hours before they receive an abortion is allowing for some time, because once the abortion starts, there's very little chance of reversing it. And so that's a forever decision that doesn't need to be made in haste. That's a forever decision that needs to be thought through. Francie Hunt, executive director for the Tennessee Advocates for Planned Parenthood, described the closure of the Women's Center as a sad symptom of the shrinking healthcare access throughout the state. Of course, they call abortion healthcare access. In addition to the shrinking number of abortion clinics, Tennesseans face the closures of rural hospitals and continued political opposition of expanded Medicaid, she said. We see this as a small part of an overarching healthcare access issue, but it's notable that it's particularly pointed at women. Without a doubt, women's health is an absolute target right now in the healthcare arena. That is what the Planned Parenthood advocate said. So, obviously, I don't agree with that point, but as we look at what is going on across the state, we look at not just from a legislative standpoint, but from a budgetary standpoint, from a citizen standpoint, the reason these abortion clinics are closing isn't because legislation is forcing them out. Now they're going to paint it as that. They're going to paint it that the Senate and the House in Nashville and the governor are all against these abortion clinics, and that's why they're having to close. But the reality is the demographic that they are going after and the demographic that they're targeting and the ones that they're charging for these abortions are looking and finding other places to go. And so there's not as many abortion clinics in the state of Tennessee, but there are pregnancy centers. You see, we're doing the work to stand with that young mom or old mom or wherever they fall, mom. To say, you don't have to make this decision immediately today. We're standing with that mom and saying, you can, in fact, have your baby and your dreams. You don't have to pick one over the other. Where abortion clinics would say, well, you can't have both. You have to pick one. We also were able to look at our patients and say, we don't need any of your money. We're not going to charge you for the services that we provide. The pregnancy tests that we provide, the ultrasounds that we provide, the STD testing and treatment that we provide, the well woman visits that we provide. We're not going to charge you for any of that. Oh, and you don't have insurance? That's okay. We're not going to charge your insurance either. Oh, and we're not going to charge the state. And we're not going to charge the federal government. So as these advocates on the other side will say that this is an attack on women's health and that that the state is not expanding Medicaid and all of these things, they always point the finger somewhere else. But ultimately, in my estimation, if they believe so strongly in the work that they're doing, why charge a dime for it? Now, would I be strongly offended if an abortion clinic started providing free abortions? Yes. But as I've said on here a number of times, at least they would be consistent. You see, our drive at Hope Resource Center to serve the women of this community isn't about how much money they can bring us. No, we have partners that help us make sure we have the funds available. Our drive is to serve these women in their time of need. You see, an abortion clinic, if a patient goes to an abortion clinic and says, I need an ultrasound, but I'm not going to have an abortion, 9 times out of 10, they won't receive that ultrasound. Why? Because, well, if you're not going to have an abortion, what is the abortion clinic going to do for you? And I know in some circles that makes people upset when I say that, but that's the truth. And I know it's the truth because of the patients that come to Hope and tell us, hey, I couldn't get an ultrasound at the abortion clinic because I told them I didn't want an abortion. And so we're providing those services at no cost because of people like you that are listening. You are helping us do that. You are helping us and helping this state and helping this country get to a place where we say women's health care does not have to include ending a life. And there are organizations like Hope Resource Center and others that are standing up, both secular and Christian organizations that are saying, we are here for the woman, we're here for the mom, how can we help? And that's who we stand with. We'll be back. I am not alone. Your heart is my home. I am not alone. Your heart is my home. So big news coming out of Nashville with the closing of one of their two abortion clinics. And now what I want to do is shift focus and look at some polls that have been put out recently, and really after the announcement that Brett Kavanaugh was going to be the next justice of the Supreme Court, as long as he's confirmed, there were some polls that were pushed to see, to kind of get a feel for the country's outlook on abortion and Roe v. Wade. And Michael New over at Town Hall wrote an article that I want to share with you because I think what he does is a great job of kind of dissecting what the poll's aim really was versus finding truth. And I get it. I know that there's polls out there that we look at that help our narrative, and we run to those, and the polls that hurt our narrative, we say, well, poll, you can't believe what the polls say. I get that. But I do think it's important that when we think about the questions that are asked in certain polls, it's clear they're trying to garner a certain answer. And so here's what New said in Town Hall. Since President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, there's been a flurry of public opinion surveys on the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision back in 1973. While all of these polls purportedly show strong public support for Roe v. Wade, nearly all of them are flawed in at least one of two ways. The first common flaw is that many polls fail to fully explain the policy implications of the Roe v. Wade decision. Indeed, Roe v. Wade went well beyond legalizing abortion in the first trimester. Indeed, Roe effectively legalized abortion on demand and made it difficult to limit late-term abortions as well. The second flaw is that many survey questions fail to explain the full implications of reversing Roe v. Wade. A reversal of Roe would not ban abortion, but would instead return abortion policy to the states. Now, that's important. When you hear people talk about the overturning of Roe v. Wade, many paint it as if, as soon as that's done, there are no more abortions in the country. Well, that's just not the way it works. It would go back to the states, which is why some states like Tennessee and Alabama and other states are looking to put pieces of legislation in place to prepare for the day that that happens. And then certain states will outlaw abortion and certain states won't. And so that's where we're at if Roe v. Wade was ever overturned. However, last month, the Wall Street Journal and NBC News commissioned a poll that managed to combine both of these flaws. The survey question began by stating that Roe v. Wade established a right to an abortion, and then he put in quotes, at least in the first 3 months of pregnancy. It then asked respondents if they would like to see the Supreme Court completely overturn, quote unquote, Roe v. Wade. As such, many respondents likely concluded that Roe v. Wade only legalized abortion in the first trimester, and reversal of Roe would ban first trimester abortions. Again, Roe v. Wade did far more than ban first trimester abortions. Furthermore, the Wall Street Journal / NBC News poll was the only recent poll that specifically asked respondents if they would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned. Negative words like quote-unquote overturn or reverse or ban all tend to poll poorly. It should come as no surprise, therefore, that this poll found that 71% of respondents support the Roe v. Wade decision, the highest level of support for Roe among any of the recent public opinion surveys. Naturally, the subsequent media coverage of this poll uncritically touted the high levels of support for Roe v. Wade and failed to consider other dimensions of public attitudes toward abortion. Indeed, certain aspects of Roe v. Wade are very unpopular with the American public. A body of research shows many incremental pro-life laws, such as limits on mid- and late-term abortions, enjoy widespread support. The most sophisticated abortion polls have shown most Americans oppose most abortions for the reasons they're actually done: finances, relationship problems, timing of pregnancy, and they prefer adoption and other alternatives. Finally, there is also research which shows that swing state voters would rather have abortion policy decided by their own elected officials instead of by the U.S. Supreme Court. Detailed polling data usefully inform public policy debates. Unfortunately, much of the recent polling on Roe v. Wade, especially the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, has generated more confusion than insight. So I bring all that up so that we can actually have a conversation on this issue. Because, again, there are going to be polls that pro-lifers push that say, look how many people are against abortion. There's going to be polls that pro-choicers push and say, look how many people are for abortion. But the fact remains that the bulk of our country want to see some type of restriction when it comes to abortion. Now, would I argue that the bulk of our country would label themselves pro-life? Not necessarily, but I would also argue that most wouldn't label themselves pro-abortion. And so many of the people that I talk to will say things like, well, I'm personally pro-life, but when it comes to law or legislation, that should be up to a woman, and so I don't think anything should be changed with Roe v. Wade. Now, that's a good cop-out. Well, and kind of allows you to wash your hands of it and say, well, personally, I wouldn't do it, but I think other people should do it. Well, that we don't say that about anything. It's like saying, well, personally, I wouldn't kill somebody, but, you know, if somebody else wants to do it, then who am I to say one way or the other? Well, that's nonsense. Personally, I wouldn't beat my children, but if somebody else wants to do it, then, you know, who am I to get involved in that? And so we have to have a conversation, and I do think it's important that we have these conversations, but when it comes to life and when it comes to abortion, when it comes to the Supreme Court, when it comes to laws, and I think the way the founders envisioned it things wouldn't just be decided by Supreme Court. It should be left up to the states. I am adamantly opposed to abortion, and I think it should be outlawed, and I think it should be a footnote in a history book. But at the very least, in the freest country on the face of the planet, in these United States of America, it should be up to the states to decide. And so what that means is places like Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, some of the southern states, your redder states, probably Midwest, the Dakotas, Montana, think about your red states, would more than likely, if not completely outlaw abortion, would certainly cap it off at probably 14 weeks, 13 weeks, something like that. And then your other states, states like California, New York, your bluer states would I would assume, pass legislation to say you can get an abortion for whatever reason at any point in time. And as a matter of fact, those states are already looking for ways to pay for your abortion, and they would probably just go further in that direction. And so what does that mean? That means you could travel there. Now, some would call that an undue burden. But there's already laws on the books that allows you to do certain things in certain states, but not in other states. So I can't smoke marijuana, which I wouldn't do, but I can't do that in Tennessee. But I could do that in Colorado. Now would I argue, well, that's an undue burden? That's not right that I can't do that here in the great state of Tennessee. But the bigger thing that we're missing in all of this, in the polls and in legislation and the Supreme Court decisions, is the moms facing unplanned pregnancies that are getting lost in the shuffle because both sides at times are using them as political pawns. Instead of saying, we'll let the courts and everything decide, but we're here to help you today. And so what are we doing to help people today? Where are we putting our money today? You know, the abortion industry is spending millions and millions and millions of dollars in lobbying fees. They're putting their money to where they think they're going to win the debate and the argument. And they believe they win in the courts and in legislatures across this country. What they could be doing is putting that money into their own budgets to look at women and say, you're not going to have to pay. We're going to be here to help you. And I'm not one to tell them how to do their job. Certainly, I wouldn't want to help them. But that's where my frustration comes in, is you have one organization, the Pregnancy Center Movement, that is motivated by love for the image bearer. And then you have the other side, those that would stand for abortion, motivated, they say, by women's health, but the reality is they're motivated by their budgets and the amount of money that they're making off the backs of women, and since 1973, 60 million unborn lives lost. That should concern us. When we come back, we're going to talk about Argentina and a decision made there that the pro-life movement should be celebrating. So the reality is we can do multiple things at once. We can serve the image bearers in our communities, and we do that at Hope Resource Center, while also being engaged in the legislative process, the process that's involved in the Supreme Courts, and all of that. But we must understand the priorities there, right? That the priority is the image bearer, first and foremost. Serving like we do at Hope Resource Center in our capacity, that is our priority first and foremost. But then we see what happened in Argentina last Thursday, and we get a better understanding of what happens when we are serving while also being engaged in the process. And this is what happened. So after a more than a 15-hour long debate, the Argentine Senate rejected a bill Thursday that would legalize elective abortion up to the first 14 weeks of pregnancy. So hear that. They rejected a bill that would legalize elective abortion. Now, what you saw a few weeks back when Ireland voted in favor of abortion, all the media outlets ran with that story. Such a big deal. It's progress around the world. Did you see this reported much? Probably not. After the decision was announced, the president in Argentina said that he is pleased the country is able to have serious discussions about, about such issues. We've shown that we have matured as a society and that we can debate with the depth and seriousness that all Argentines expected, and democracy won. Since the bill was rejected, women's rights advocates in Argentina have been demonstrating their support for the legalization of abortion. We won. Journalists and activists said we won because arguments based on religious beliefs show how deceitful they are. Well, I wouldn't agree with that statement. In Argentina, abortion is currently allowed only in cases such as rape and if the woman's health is at risk. However, according to official statistics reported by Human Rights Watch and Argentina's health ministry, over 17% of the 245 recorded deaths of pregnant women and girls in 2016 were due to abortion, making it the top cause of maternal mortality in the country. But Argentine writer Claudia Pinheiro wrote Monday that she believes criminalizing abortion is not the answer. If we keep prohibiting abortion, it still won't stop Argentine women from having them. It's time we legalize and provide a public health framework for a practice that existed, exists, and will continue to exist. In addition, Jesse Clyde, who is the director of grant-making international partnerships at the International Women's Health Coalition, called the movement unstoppable, adding that advocates are going to stop pushing for the legalization of abortion anytime soon, that they're not going to stop. There's no going back. Women's rights advocates will continue to mobilize, and those who refuse to listen to their demands will pay a political price. They are confident that change is coming sooner rather than later. The Senate may underestimate the power of the women's movement, but this fight is not over. However, Cardinal Mario Poli, who is the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, told church members it's not about religious beliefs, but about a humanitarian reason. Caring for life is the first human right and the duty of the state. In contrast, the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Laws, or as you may know them as NARAL, tweeted their disapproval of the decision. And they say experts estimate that Argentinians have over 500,000 illegal abortion procedures every year. Yeah, I don't believe that at all. Nearly 60,000 people are hospitalized, they say, from complications with unsafe abortion in Argentina. Senators just voted to keep it that way. In June, Pope Francis, who is originally from Argentina, denounced abortion by saying, "Last century, the whole world was scandalized by what the Nazis did to purify the race. Today, we do the same thing, but with white gloves," adding that families should accept children as God gives them to us. And so one thing that we have to understand is both sides are going to push a narrative. There's no doubt about that. So I'm not surprised that NARAL says that we need more abortions. That's what they want. And I'm not surprised that March for Life and Right to Life folks say we need less abortions. Well, of course. But just look at that from a try to be objective and just look at it and try your best. I know it's difficult to take your pro-life hat off or your pro-choice hat off for just a second and look at the organizations and look at the issue itself. You have one group of people that are fighting and arguing for the ending of life in the womb for any reason. Elective abortion means for any reason. So I'm even saying at this point, take off the table because of rape or incest or life of the mother. Just look at elective abortions for any reason. They don't have the money. They're in a rough relationship. They don't know who the dad is. This was all unexpected. Just a number of different reasons, okay? And think about, you have one side that's saying a life should end in the womb at any point. In the first 6 weeks, the first 14 weeks, in the first 20 weeks, you have some folks that would even say all the way up to birth, you should be able to take the life of that child. Then you have another group of folks that would say they're pro-life. That again, even if I give you the exceptions of rape, incest, life of the mother, which again, I'm pro-life 100%, no exceptions. But let's give those exceptions. You have another group that's saying Life is precious. Every life has value. Every life deserves a voice. Every life deserves a chance. Which one is the extremist? Which group is immoral? I would argue that even a secular person who would want to protect life scripture says that even wicked people love their family members. Even wicked people would take care of their friends. The difference is we would stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves. We would love our enemy. That's what Christians are to do. So frankly, if you're a Christian, it's a no-brainer. Life is precious and matters to you. But this is a humanitarian issue. 60 million lives lost since 1973. At some point, a generation has to stand up for a generation that was lost to abortion. Now, has the pro-life side always done it the right way? No. But the mantra used to be for pro-choicers, safe, legal, and rare. That's what they would say when they talked about abortions. We want them safe, we want them legal, and we want them rare. Meaning, we don't want them for any reason. We just, in the situations that call for that, they need to be allowed. Now, I don't agree with that mindset. But at least in that mindset, you're going, well, we don't want just any abortion for any reason. But we know that's not the mantra anymore. Because now it's, well, no matter what the reason, you should be able to have an abortion at any point. We had a candidate run for the highest office in our land last election cycle that said a baby did not receive rights until it left the hospital. Think about that. So not only are they going after the babies in the womb, but after the baby leaves the womb, don't technically have rights until it leaves the hospital. That's nonsense. And so this is a delicate subject, clearly. It's a polarizing subject, clearly. As soon as you bring up abortion or pro-life, pro-choice, people run to their political corners. They run to their corners. They run to their tribes and they say, I'm ready to fight. No one wants to have an actual conversation. But my fear is no one wants to look in the mirror. No one wants to look the issue right in the eye and say, does life have value or not? In the state of Tennessee, we just executed a man for a grisly rape and murder of a little girl years ago. And I'm not going to debate the death penalty here today. But we saw article after article, people coming out in support or against, but there were conversations about a man's life. We found out what he was going to eat for his last meal. We found all of those things out. There were conversations about what needs to happen with this life. Those conversations should happen. But here's a secret for you. Every single day in the greatest country on the planet, in our country, 3,000 lives are lost to abortion. Every single day. So should we be having a conversation about it? Of course we should. And we don't have to do that in a hateful manner or an aggressive manner. But we do need to be having the conversation. And so when some people say we need to restrict abortion, it's not because they hate women. It's because they love life. When I say we need to restrict abortion at 20 weeks and further, it's not because I hate women. It's because I love life. And then some would say, well, what are you going to do when that child's born into a rough home life and into poverty or is taken into state's custody? You going to adopt them? Yes. Yes, more people need to adopt. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. Yes, the church needs to foster. It's crazy that there's kids in the foster system. They need homes. Absolutely. But it doesn't change the fact, just because I'm afraid they're going to end up in poverty, that I don't want them to have a chance to live. There's a lot of people that were born into poverty that changed the world. But let me tell you where my heart is. I stand for that child that is born into poverty and never gets out of poverty. I still believe that child needs a life and a right to life, has a right to life. So my argument isn't that we might have aborted a child that had the cure for cancer. My argument is every single child, 60 million that have been lost since 1973, have value and matter. And we stand for them. We'll be back. Spirit, lead me where my trust is without borders. Let me walk upon the waters wherever you would call me. Take me deeper than my feet could ever wander. And my faith will be made stronger in the prayer. So today we talked about some issues that were, I think, important, and I hope that you hear my heart and passion behind that. This is an issue that is going to define my generation, and there's no question in my mind that this is the one. I think one day my kids, my grandkids are going to say, "You lived during the time when abortion was legal in the U.S. What were y'all doing?" In the same way that I look at my parents and grandparents and say, "Wait, you mean certain people couldn't go to certain restaurants and couldn't sit in certain parts of the bus and couldn't drink out of certain water fountains? Like, y'all allowed that to happen?" And so there's nothing wrong with recognizing a mistake. And I said it weeks ago, the reason that our country is the way it is because we have been willing over the years to look ourselves in the mirror and say, "This is not who we are." And we called an audible, we put in the legislation, we made the right amendments, and we changed course. And this is an issue that I think we need to do that on, and I pray that it'll be sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, until that day comes, we have work to do, which is why we open our doors every day at Hope Resource Center. It's why the close to 3,000 pregnancy centers across this country do the same thing. It's because there's people in our communities that aren't getting caught up in polls and pro-life versus pro-choice and legislation and all of those things. There are people in our communities that are struggling and need help. And so we want to be there to serve and to help them. And you can help us do that. Go to investinghope.com. You can partner with us financially. Click the donate button. You can send us an email and say, "I want to volunteer. I want to mentor. I want to help out with baby showers." There's plenty of ways to get involved, and we would welcome that. A couple ways that are happening in just a few weeks. We have our first 5K. That's going to be at Cherokee Boulevard in Sequoia Hills, and we want to see you there. September 1st. And you can find more information about that at investinghope.com. Click the About Us or the Get Involved tab and click on Events, and then you can find it there. Also, we have a golf tournament. If you're listening, you love to play golf, we have a golf tournament coming up in October. Again, investinghope.com, Get Involved tab, and click on Events, and you can find out more about the golf tournament. Maybe you're listening today and you are a business person and you don't want to run, you don't want to play golf, but you want to sponsor one of those events, you can shoot me an email at andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Would love to connect with you and get you the information that you need to do that. We are grateful for the partnership that we have in this city, across this state, and across this country in Standing for Life. We are going to continue to do this work as long as the good Lord calls us to do this work, because there are men and women in this community that need people to stand for them. And in our estimation, why wait for someone else to stand up for them? Why wait for someone else to do it? That's why Hope was opened in 1997, and that's why we still operate today, is because our answer wasn't sit around and wait and sit on our hands. Our answer was, this is how we are going to engage the process. This is how we're going to serve our city. And praise God that there's churches all across this city that agree and stand with us and make those things happen and make all of this a reality at Hope Resource Center. We are grateful for your partnership. I'm grateful that you listen to this show, and I'll talk to you next week.